Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, appropriately enough, Michael Cutler. November 21st, 2014. Boy, that was the week that was for so many people around the country. The heavy snows, the president's blizzard of his own making. Where do we begin? For those of you who are familiar with me, you know that I'm a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service, an agency that was sliced and diced and put into a new organization in the wake of the 9/11 terror attacks, an agency that they call the Department, pardon me, that our government calls the Department of Homeland Security, and I call the Department of Homeland Surrender. And if there's any doubt that this is the Department of Homeland Surrender, you only needed to listen to President or perhaps Emperor Obama's speech last night. Ever since 9/11, my mission, and I have accepted it, is to try to provide my perspectives on the immigration crisis, the true significance of immigration, because it is not a single issue, but a singular issue that impacts virtually every challenge, every threat that America and Americans are facing today. And so here we are, and I thank you for joining me, and I hope you find the information that I put out there helpful. I hope it gives you the kind of perspective that will enable you to go to your elected representatives and make demands on them. I mean, this is really critically important. We, the people, are lousy employers. You would never know it, but Pelosi and all those other characters work for us. And I single out Pelosi because it still sticks in my craw that just a couple of years after 9/11, she went to Mexico City and referred to the federal agents of ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, my former colleagues, as committing terror acts or terrorizing the poor undocumented immigrants. And look, as an agent, I did feel bad for many people who came here out of desperation, but certainly that never solved the problem in their home countries, just led to more abuses by the oligarchies of their countries, and quite frankly, empowered the growing oligarchy of the United States. But many of these folks are also involved with other activities, but one way or the other, what she called a climate of fear, I would refer to as a climate of deterrence. But it's not one side of the aisle or the other. You know, I write for a bunch of organizations, and while we're talking about that, let me put the websites out there. Please check these websites out. First and foremost, my own website, Michael Cutler, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net, one word. And then I am and have been for a bunch of years a senior fellow with a wonderful organization out in Santa Barbara, California, known as CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization. The name isn't very sexy, and you might hear California and think, oh gosh, I don't live in California. Really, they have been the canary in the mine, because the issues that have been hammering California, the issues that relate to the failures of border security and immigration law enforcement, have really been hammering the whole country. But they got hammered first and probably worse than any other state. Although I have to tell you, we are indeed a nation of 50 border states, and I keep making that point, and we'll get into it a little bit later on in my program. But CAPS does great work. Their website is CAPSWeb, C-A-P-S, CAPSWeb.org. I really want you to go to their website. They raise issues about the environment. They talk about the impact of the state of affairs on the wages of American workers, what this means to the minority communities across the country. There's nothing inherently wrong with enforcing our immigration laws. There's nothing racist about it. Our laws don't distinguish by race, religion, or ethnicity. The laws are designed to keep people out of the country who would imperil the lives or livelihoods of America, of Americans and American workers. And how in the world could anybody find fault with that? So please go to capsweb.org. I have a couple of recent articles up, one of which I think is really super important, and it's called The Lack of Intelligence and the Failures to Enforce the Immigration Laws. Intelligence from two perspectives. It's dumb, I mean really dumb, to not enforce the laws and enforce our borders, because they are our first and last line of defense. against the transnational criminals, against international terrorists, against aliens with dangerous diseases, and against aliens who would take the jobs Americans desperately need. We are certainly not out of the woods. I don't care what Wall Street is doing. I care what the average American is doing. So, again, capsweb.org. Also, I'm very happy that I have become a columnist for Front Page Magazine, terrific magazine published by the David Horowitz Freedom Center. Last weekend, did not do my show for a good reason. I have an excuse, and I'll give you the note, you know. I was in Florida at the Breakers Hotel down in West Palm Beach, and boy, this week I wish I was there with the cold weather we were having. It was 80 degrees in Florida, and I was one of many people who spoke at the event. I had an absolute distinct privilege of participating in a panel discussion with Senator Jeff Sessions, the man I would love to see the next president, also Congressman Louis Gohmert and Congressman John Fleming. So it was fabulous participating in that panel discussion with them, holding numerous meetings with them, listening to Governor Perry, and I have areas that I disagree with Governor Perry. Interesting crowd, though. Ann Coulter spoke. Congressman Bridenstine spoke. In fact, I had a meeting with Congressman Bridenstine as well. I met briefly with Michelle Bachmann. Truly an extraordinary event. I considered myself fortunate to be able to attend that event in Florida for roughly 3 days, 3 or 4 days. But back in the saddle, here we are in New York and into the fire with Obama. Also, I wrote a policy paper, for another terrific organization known as Progressives for Immigration Reform. And they are progressive. They do lean to the left. So this goes back to the point that I've been making right along. And in fact, my piece was called The Liberal Case for Effective Immigration Law Enforcement. It's not about left or right. It's about right or wrong. I don't know how in the world we've heard this mythology, and it really seems to have gained traction along with a lot of other nonsense and BS. This is about people with an agenda trying the old divide and conquer strategy. You know, they talk about the Latino vote, and you hear it on all the major networks. You hear it on all the major networks. Well, the president is pandering to the Latino vote. This congressman or that congressman is worried about losing the Latino vote. And usually when they start talking about the Latino vote, what they're talking about is immigration. And I want you guys out there and gals to think about something. Is it not the most disgusting, despicable, outrageous form of profiling to talk about the Latino vote, the black vote, the Jewish vote, the Catholic vote? Goodness. I mean, let's be very blunt about this. The idea that if you know that somebody is a Latino, then you believe they all vote the same way. Why don't we just say those people? If your name is Rodriguez Garcia, whatever, oh, we know all we need to know about you. We have your last name. It's an outrage. And the journalists who jump up and down and have a hissy fit when they even think that law enforcement engaged in profiling, and there are times when profiling is appropriate, not just because some guy is black, but because some guy doesn't fit in with his surroundings. Maybe it's the way he or she is dressed. Maybe it's the car he or she is driving. Maybe it's the hour of the night. Maybe it's the way he's hiding in the shadows between the trees as he's going down a particular block. There's behavioral issues. There's a whole bunch of different ways that all come to play in law enforcement where profiling is appropriate. It can be done proactively. It shouldn't be simply, oh, I'm going to stop every black guy who walks by, or I'm going to stop every Asian-looking guy who walks by, or every white guy that walks. No, it's about the totality of circumstances, conduct, and so forth, and then it's reasonable. But these same journalists, so-called, who scream and rant and rave, oh, my God, they were profiling, will then turn to the next story and start discussing the Latino vote as though it's real. Let me tell you how unreal it is. I was just listening to Fox a little while ago, Fox News on TV. 49% of registered Latinos who were interviewed, registered to vote, said that the economy was the number one issue, 49%. Roughly 16% said it was immigration, 16%. Yet we're told by the media day in, day out, the solid drumbeat, the Latinos want open borders, the Latinos want comprehensive reform. This is the way to get the Latino vote. And what this really is a way of stampeding idiotic politicians. And in most cases, I'm being redundant for saying that. Not in all cases, certainly not with Jeff Sessions, not with Louie Gohmert, not with apparently John Fleming, first time I met him, but I was favorably impressed. Certainly not with my good friend Lou Barletta, Steve King, David Vitter. There's a bunch of people that are really trying to do the right thing. But you have politicians like John Boehner, and that's exactly what I refer to him. He angers me endlessly. Who's chasing a myth, chasing a fantasy. You know, it's time we had leaders, people who could stand there and say, listen, folks, the ethnic immigrant communities, not just the Latinos, it's the Russians, it's the Asians, it's the Caribbean, it's the European. When we don't enforce those laws, those ethnic communities are hammered because the bad guys who come into this country from their home countries set up shop in the neighborhoods among the people who are most like themselves, and it's those folks and those ethnic immigrant communities who suffer the greatest harm, the violence, the extortion, the intimidation. I used to raid houses of prostitution. Myself, other immigration agents, very often we work with the New York City Police Department Public Moral Squad. And let me tell you what we found. We found that generally the clientele of the prostitutes who were of the same ethnicity as the community, again, Russians, Asians, Latinos, doesn't matter. They mirrored the population. Their clientele often were illegal aliens who had come to America, left their wives and girlfriends behind. And here they are frequenting these massage parlors. Now, some of the girls were hookers. They knew why they were here. It was no big deal for them. They were hookers at home. They were hookers here. But a lot of these girls weren't. A lot of them came here thinking they were going to be waitresses or nannies or whatever, who knows, and got coerced, got shanghaied, as it were, got forced, into becoming prostitutes. Their lives wrecked. The horrors they went through was disgusting. And then we hear the mythology, well, if aliens fall victim to crime, they won't go to the police because the police will immediately call immigration, and before the day is over, these people will be back on their airplane going home. Another lie. In fact, there are visas that can be provided to victims of crimes, and they know it. And there's visas that we provide to aliens who become cooperators in major criminal investigations. And that was part of what I wrote about when I spoke about this lack of intelligence. It's not only stupid to not enforce the law, but we're losing a valuable capability of getting members of those ethnic immigrant communities to cooperate with us and become informants, to become cooperators, to provide evidence and information to us. We are actually, I won't say purposely blind, flying blind, but the administration is not paying any attention to the ways that immigration laws can be used effectively and immigration law enforcement authority can be used effectively to uncover criminal organizations. The guy that buys the fake documents so he can work in a greasy spoon diner is going to the same document vendor that perhaps terrorists or criminals are using. There are so many investigations that could be conducted to help us stay safe. But by taking immigration off the table, we are allowing people to come into the country without being inspected. I mean, think about this. Would you get on an airplane if you saw people sidestep the TSA process? I wouldn't. I jokingly made the point when I was down in Washington with Progressives for Immigration Reform, and I made the same point, I believe, when I was in Florida last weekend, that nobody wants a window seat on a cruise missile. So we hear the nonsense, oh, they're undocumented, and they're entitled to this, and they're entitled to that, they being the illegal aliens, and it's about compassion. And I find it remarkable that we talk about compassion while ignoring the dangers and the harm being done to lawful immigrants in America, the harm being done to United States citizens in America. Why is it not compassionate to try to protect our country, to try to protect the jobs of our citizens? One in four American workers now live below, one in four American families actually is now living below the poverty line. I mean, it's remarkable. I was watching TV and someone made the point, it was Geraldo this morning. Oh my goodness gracious, Geraldo Rivera. Geraldo, Geraldo, Geraldo. The lips are moving, and you know he's not telling the truth. He said, well, unemployment is great. It's down to 5-point-something percent. And Tucker Carlson was on trying to argue with him, and he was turning purple. And I've met both of these guys, and Tucker really gets it. And Tucker was talking about all the people that aren't being included when we look at the unemployment statistics. It's estimated that there are tens of millions, perhaps close to 100 million Americans of working age not working. And the administration and the Labor Department just ignores them. It says, oh, the unemployment rate is 5-point-whatever percent. Well, when I was in Washington, I compared that to the kid that comes home who's been flunking his exams and tells his parents, hey, I finally got a 90 on my science test, and the parents are ready to take this kid out to dinner and a movie to celebrate, and the mother says, let me see your test paper. So he hands his mother the test paper, and sure enough, on question one, he gets a 90. And then she looks at all the other questions, and they're all zeros. It's outrageous. It's meaningless. It's deceptive. It's a con artist dream to talk about a 5-point-something percent unemployment rate while ignoring roughly a third of the population of the United States. I mean, this is con artistry at a level that Madoff couldn't imagine. And they get away with it, and mostly the media doesn't say a word. They just report the 5% or whatever it is unemployment rate, ignoring tens of millions of unemployed Americans. It's startling, folks. It's startling. And I was on a radio program last night, and people were calling in and said, oh, you're a hate monger. You're using scare tactics because I talked about the nexus between immigration and terrorism. Oh, this is a terrible thing you're doing. You know, you're just playing on people's fears. No, I'm not. You know, you need go no further than the 9/11 Commission, to which I provided testimony. I mean, this notion that I'm a fear monger because I believe that we need to understand that immigration is a vital component of national security is absolutely insane. But that was the accusation. You're a fearmonger. You're into hate, all sorts of things. You're intolerant. How many more insults can you throw? So, you know, if you look at what the 9/11 Commission report had to say, they were very clear on this. I mean, maybe they thought that the 9/11 Commission was put together to stir up hate. I mean, I have no idea at this point. We live in a very dangerous era, folks, of people who are incapable of thinking. Let me start out, and I know I've read this before, but given what the president did, and given the argument I had on the radio program last night that still sticks in my craw, let me start out by reading to you the preface of the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. The 9/11 Commission staff were the federal agents, FBI, ATF, immigration agents, and others, who worked with the 9/11 commissioners to put together the report. They did the grunt work. They went out into the street. They conducted the interviews. They gathered the evidence. And then there were their attorneys who worked, again, with those agents, all at the behest of the 9/11 Commission. So this is the very first paragraph of the preface of the 9/11 Commission report. You tell me if I'm being a hate monger when I say that immigration and border security are vital components of national security. Here's how it begins. It is perhaps obvious to state that terrorists cannot plan and carry out attacks in the United States if they're unable to enter the country. Yet prior to September 11, while there were efforts to enhance border security, no agency of the U.S. government thought of border security as a tool in the counterterrorism arsenal. Indeed, even after 19 hijackers demonstrated the relative ease of obtaining a U.S. visa and gaining admission into the United States, border security still is not considered a cornerstone of national security policy. We believe, for reasons that we discuss in the following pages, that it must be made one. So you're being a fearmonger or a hate person by saying we got to be careful to not let terrorists into the United States? Really? Does anybody really believe that? I mean, I can't tell you how many members of Congress have gone public and said, oh, immigration has nothing to do with terrorism. That's ridiculous. And meanwhile, they sat at hearings where I've testified about the nexus between immigration and terrorism. And then they go public and they say, oh, immigration has nothing to do with terrorism. Nothing to see here, folks. Keep on moving. Nothing to see. It's all, you know, nothing. Baloney. I want to read three headlines to you. We're going to get a little bit into this. National Review published a report October 8th this year, October 8th, a month ago. ISIS fighters getting caught coming across the U.S. border. And they quoted Duncan Hunter, member of Congress, and this was Greta Van Susteren. And he told her that he had gone to Border Patrol agents who had told him that he had grabbed, I think the number was that they knew of 10 members of ISIS who were stopped at the border, taken into custody. And as Congressman Hunter said, the Border Patrol reported to him that if we grab 10, how many got through? Think of how many times you've been on the highway speeding and no one gets stopped. Or one guy gets stopped and 100 more people go charging past. And I find it so remarkable that the government throws these numbers around with no way of knowing and no way of verifying anything. They just pull numbers out of thin air. They pull a number out of their left ear or a number out of their right ear. Perhaps they pull a number out of some other orifice. God only knows. Well, the Border Patrol apprehends 1 in 3. The Border Patrol apprehends 1 in 6. Do they even know? You don't know what you don't know. I was on with Neil Cavuto a while back. And by the way, I'm scheduled to be on Neil's program a week from today. We'll see what happens. TV is kind of in flux. You never know what's going to happen. But if the schedule holds, I'll be on next Friday. I was on with Neil, and he said, well, you know, arrests are down, and that probably means there are fewer illegal aliens here. I said, well, arrests along the Mexican border, I mean, that's not the only way to come here. In fact, I wrote an article for Front Page Magazine, and I gave it the title Border Security and the Immigration Colander. And I said it was absurd to say that if you could sort of halfway plug one of the holes in the bottom of that colander that you use to drain pasta, that now you can use that colander as a bucket to carry water or perhaps a dangerous liquid. It's crazy. There are so many holes, there are so many components to that system. But in any event, that's the mythology. You know, we just have this one issue to take care of. And so they throw these statistics around, you know, 1 in 3, 1 in 5. Now we're being told 5 million aliens will qualify under the Obama program. What happens if it's 20 million? What if it's 25 million? You know, a couple of weeks ago, the headlines were blaring that the administration had ordered up 34 million green cards, 34 million. And when they tried to ask the press secretary about it, his answer was, we don't get involved with office supplies. Office supplies? Were we talking about crayons and coloring books for the people in the administration? What do you mean office supplies? Green cards are not office supplies. I mean, you know, the contempt for our intelligence marches lockstep with this guy Gruber. Gruber, who talked about how idiotic Americans were. Well, I mean, actually, maybe he's got a point. We did reelect this administration. We do reelect a lot of imbeciles in Congress and a lot of crooks and whack-a-loons that continue to have careers in politics where they should have been out on their backsides a long time ago. But, I mean, it's just a crazy notion. Ronald Reagan, when I was an agent back in 86, the Reagan administration, and Reagan went out there and he made a statement, oh, this amnesty of 86, you know, the Immigration Reform and Control Act, we're probably looking at a million and a quarter. It was a kind of a squishy number. You know, it's hard to know the exact number because, you know, they're here illegally. Well, guess what? The 1 to 1.25 million, 1.5 million, whatever numbers were, quickly became eclipsed. Eventually, the ultimate number went between 3.5 and 4 million. So if Obama is telling us 5 million, and someone else already this morning said 6 million, multiply it by 3, multiply it by 4. We have no idea. We have no idea. So they're saying, well, what are we going to do? You know, we're going to just take care of these people and everything is fine. Okay. And the border is secure. Right. And in fact, Obama went out there and said that. The border has been secure and the arrests are down and nobody is coming. And what was so remarkable about those statements was on Sunday of last weekend, Sunday morning, we had breakfast at the Breakers. This was during the David Horowitz Freedom Center's restoration weekend. And two people spoke. One guy was a reporter for the Wall Street Journal, the other was an economist. Oh, there are fewer people coming because of the recession. We don't have to worry. The border is fine. And we need many, 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 many more high-tech workers, because when we bring in high-tech workers, they all start new companies, and those companies hire thousands of people. And boy, this is going to make the economy take off. Wow. And, you know, it was funny because I was sitting with some folks at the table, and we became friendly over the weekend, so we kind of hung out. And these folks, very well-to-do, very successful, very bright people. And they're clapping like crazy. And I said, why are you applauding? I said, you're applauding the destruction of the middle class. And I don't blame them. This is the narrative that we keep hearing. We're hearing it from everyone. We hear it from Wall Street. We hear it from the politicians. It's in the mainstream media. Turn it on Fox. They'll talk about how this would be great for the economy. And I, you know, Michelle Bachmann got up and spoke. And then I saw my hero, Jeff Sessions, raise his hand, and they rushed a wireless mic over. And I said to the folks I was sitting with, wait till you hear Sessions. I said, they just laid off 18,000 high-tech workers in Silicon Valley. How many do we really need to bring into the country, and how will it help us? They didn't get into remittances, but that's another issue, of course. In fact, if you go to the UN website or the World Bank website, they'll tell you that the two fastest ways to increase the remittances, the money wired from the United States to third world countries, the two fastest ways of increasing that money, draining it out of our economy, going in the opposite direction of the economic stimulus package that helped get us into hock. Two best ways to get the money out of our country and over to the third world: sustainability and enact immigration reform, comprehensive immigration reform. And sure enough, Senator Sessions got up and he said, listen, I want truly extraordinary people to come to America. And they do come. But he said, you're talking about bringing in tens of thousands of additional, or maybe hundreds of thousands of additional high-tech workers at a time when American high-tech workers are losing their jobs. How many people do you think we really have jobs for? And the people I was sitting with were really amazed. They said, wow, that's exactly what you said. I said, yeah. I said, Sessions gets it. He's a hero. He's bright, and he has the integrity to tell the truth. What a novel idea. People like Sessions, people like Lou Barletta, people like Steve King. I'm not going to go down the list because I'm going to leave someone out. And people are going to say, don't you think that guy's honest? I mean, we do have some honest politicians. It's hard to believe when you listen to all the nonsense that we hear from D.C. I mean, this is really their season, isn't it? Thanksgiving, with all those turkeys in D.C. working on the Hill that, by the way, was built on landfill appropriately enough. But Sessions got it. Jeff Sessions said, this is crazy. This is just going to undercut the jobs and opportunities for Americans. And then I raised my hand, and they very nicely brought the microphone over to me. And what I did was to quote Alan Greenspan. And I mean, this is so astonishing to me, because Alan Greenspan testified for Chuck Schumer. And Chuck Schumer, or as I like to call him, Chuck the Schmuck. I have no use for the guy. He used to be my congressman. He was never my representative. It would be nice if he'd stop playing games with all of us. But here is what Greenspan had to say, and this was on the issue of comprehensive immigration reform. And I really want you to pay attention to the words. First, he talked about how, although it doesn't sit well with the American people to let illegal aliens come to the country and stay here and work, they form a flexible labor force. I mean, it's amazing. In fact, let me read this thing about the illegal aliens, since we are talking about them in view of Obama's plans. This is from Greenspan's prepared testimony for that Senate hearing, April 30th, 2009. Immigration to the U.S. slowed markedly with the onset of the current economic crisis. But as this crisis fades, there's little doubt that the attraction of the United States to foreign workers and their families will revive. I hope by then a badly needed set of reforms to our nation's immigration laws will have been put into place. Isn't it remarkable? Back then, right? Oh, everything is okay. The pace has slowed. That's the message. Nothing to see here, folks. Keep on moving. The pace has slowed. And then he goes on and says, there are two distinctly different policy issues that confront the Congress. The first is illegal immigration. The notion of rewarding with permanent resident status those who have broken our immigration laws does not sit well with the American people. In a recent poll, two-thirds would like to see the number of illegals decreased. But there is little doubt that unauthorized, that is, illegal immigration, has made a significant contribution to the growth of our economy. Think of that. This is what the American people want. However, you're not going to get it. That's what the but means. But nevertheless. And he talks about how they contributed to the growth of the economy. No, it's not that they contributed to the growth of the economy. It's that they have been taking an increasing number of jobs in the labor pool. And what does that mean? Fewer Americans working. That's why the unemployment rate was a problem. That's why wages are a problem. Let me keep on with this. Excuse me, I seem to have Kermit the Frog visiting today. He goes on and says, between 2000 and 2007, for example, it, meaning unauthorized immigration, accounted for more than a sixth of the increase in our total civilian labor force. Think about that. So the labor force is now more than ever comprised of illegal aliens. If you got the illegal aliens out of the workforce, you could get Americans back to work. This is what I had asked Newt Gingrich when I spoke at the Tea Party convention in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, 3 years ago. And I'm going to be back this coming January, in fact. But I said to Newt Gingrich, I said, with all this talk about creating jobs, why don't you talk about the need to liberate jobs? And Newt said, well, how do you liberate jobs? I said, you enforce the immigration laws. You know, it takes a long time to create a job. You have to have a concept. You have to flesh it out. You know, the devil's in the details and work out all the facts, all the figures, figure out how to really make whatever it is you want to do happen, right down to the bottom line, cross the T's and dot the I's, and then you go get the money. And when you finally get the money, then you get to build a facility. Folks, this can take years. We have Americans who are losing their homes to foreclosure yesterday. They don't have years. But you know what? If immigration came in and got rid of the illegal workers, the American workers can take the jobs. And when we hear the lies, oh, these are jobs Americans don't want. Let me tell you what I saw as an agent. And it's in the newspapers also. We would raid a factory, and sometimes that very same day, or certainly by the next day, there'd be a line of American and lawful immigrant workers stretching around the block hoping to get those jobs that had been liberated by the enforcement of our immigration laws. No time wasted. No time wasted. No money spent. Immigration comes in, takes out the illegal aliens. That's why they're illegal, not supposed to be working. That's one of the things Greenspan wants to reform, because right now our laws are supposed to shield American workers from unfair foreign competition. Under our laws, Americans are not supposed to compete with foreign workers for jobs. Americans get first dibs. So everybody who stands there and says, let's reform immigration, what they're saying is, let's make Americans compete with people from third world countries. This is a race to the bottom, a race to the bottom. And the only people who are going to win that race to the bottom are the people at the extreme top, 1%. The 1%ers are salivating. And the rest of us, lots of luck. But anyway, I digress. So Greenspan goes on and says, between 2000 and 2007, for example, illegal immigration accounted for more than a sixth of the increase in our total civilian labor force. The illegal part of the civilian labor force diminished last year as the economy slowed, though illegals still comprised an estimated 5% of our total civilian labor force. 5%! We're talking millions upon millions of jobs, folks. This is insanity. And I think the numbers are higher than that because Greenspan, in my view, is nothing more than a liar, a con artist, a swindler. Okay? And then he goes on and says, unauthorized immigrants serve as a flexible component to our workforce. How can they be a flexible component when they're not supposed to be working according to our laws? And then he says that he refers to them as being often a safety valve when demand is pressing and among the first to be discharged when the economy falters. They shouldn't be working. I don't get it. I don't get it. What do you mean? They're a flexible labor force. we're bending over backwards to displace American workers in this country, folks. And then, he says, some evidence suggests that unskilled illegal immigrants, almost all from Latin America, marginally suppress wage levels of native-born Americans without a high school diploma and impose a significant cost on some state and local governments. However, here's that word again, however, the estimated wage suppression and fiscal costs are relatively small. Right. The man who's a gazillionaire says, oh, so Americans lose a dollar an hour, $2, whatever. That's trivial. A dollar an hour or whatever it is, it's probably a lot more than that, by the way, is hardly trivial to somebody who can barely buy a hamburger for lunch at McDonald's. Please. And he says, economists generally view the overall economic benefits of this workforce as significantly outweighing the costs. Accordingly, I hope some temporary worker program can be crafted. Significantly outweighing the costs for whom? For whom? By the way, you should know that a dozen years ago, people working in the meatpacking plants were making $18 an hour. 18. Now they make about 10 bucks an hour. The salaries not only haven't gone up, but they've been slashed. $10 an hour back then is a lot more than $10 an hour now, but back then they were making $18 an hour. So we are talking about a huge number of workers finding their salaries being hammered into the ground. And then they say, well, those are jobs Americans don't want. Baloney. Americans were working in those slaughterhouses and the packing houses. You know why they're not working there now? Because Americans can't survive on $10 an hour, and that's what these plants are willing to pay. This is the screwing of America, folks. The screwing of America and Americans. But now, he says, the second policy issue that must be addressed by Congress is the even more compelling need to facilitate the inflow of skilled foreign workers. Our primary and secondary school systems are increasingly failing to produce the skilled workers needed to utilize fully our ever more sophisticated and complex stock of intellectual and physical capital. And he goes on and on and on, and he says that the consequence of our educational shortfall is that a highly disproportionate number of our exceptionally skilled workers are foreign-born. Two-fifths of the science PhDs in our workforce, for example, are foreign-born. Silicon Valley has a remarkably large number of foreign-born workers. Not because Americans aren't available. This is by design. Dan Rather did an amazing one-hour special. No commercials. I happened to trip over it by accident on television. There's a series that he does on cable TV called Dan Rather Reports. The segment that he ran was called No Thanks for Everything. They interviewed three or four computer programmers who were well-experienced and worked many years in the industry. One woman, in fact, was really extraordinary. She'd been the vice president of a Wall Street bank, had her MBA in computer science, was a Phi Beta Kappa graduate, had worked for Bill Gates, the dirtbag, and I always like to tag that after him because he's destroying the jobs for Americans. So here's a woman who worked for him for years, had the perfect qualifications. She was actually a manager. Comes to work one day and they said, oh, you don't work here anymore. Clean out your desk. Here's a box. Fill it up with your junk and get out of here. And she said, what did I do wrong? They said, nothing. You just don't have a job anymore. And one of the policy decisions that Gates and these other people have made, and I've heard about it in a number of places, and I doubt Gates is listening, but hey, Billy, if you're listening, send me over contradictory information, Billy. I have such rage for this guy, Billy Gates, Billy Goat, Billy Gates. I mean, he what he's eating is our labor force in this country, destroying it. I am angry beyond words, because what they then do is not give letters of reference to make certain that American programmers don't get jobs in the industry. That's why Zuckerberg had something called a hackathon, where he personally, with other CEOs in Silicon Valley, personally, would mentor kids to teach them how to write computer code. You couldn't imagine paying for the services of these folks. there was only one qualification. You had to be an illegal alien in order to qualify. Why not do that for American children living in abject poverty? Why not do that for returning GIs who maybe lost their legs defending Gates' sorry ass? Americans need not apply. You know, they get angry if you use the word alien, unless you're using it in conjunction with the Dream Act, the Dreamers. The A in Dreamer is alien. I mean, this is a remarkable situation of self-hating Americans. The wealthiest man in America hates his own country, hates his fellow countrymen. There's no other way of describing it. No other way. Americans are genetically too stupid to learn computer code. Really? He was born in this country. My first wife died about 29 years ago of cancer. She was in her early 30s. She had an MBA in computer science and was a Phi Beta Kappa graduate as well. Don't give me this nonsense. I have a son who's an engineer, and my youngest son is in engineering school right now. Don't tell me what Americans can't achieve. It's a lie. It's about greed. It's about bringing people in from third world countries who will work for bupkis compared to an American. That's what this is about. And if you look at the remittances, folks, it's India that gets the lion's share of remittances from around the world. Everyone thinks it's Mexico, it's India. Globally, India collected last year between $60 and $70 billion, with a B, billion. China came in second, Mexico came in third. It's the high-tech workers that are draining the economy and destroying the middle class. And then he goes on, Mr. Greenspan, and says, the quantity of temporary H-1B visas issued each year is far too small to meet the need, especially in the near future, as the economy copes with the forthcoming retirement of skilled baby boomers. Really? They haven't retired yet, but we need to have more, anticipating they're going to retire. How many people have you seen interviewed who are 70 years old who can't afford to retire? But because they're going to retire, we have to plan now, avoid the rush later. And then he said, as Bill Gates, the chairman of Microsoft, succinctly testified before Congress in March 2007, quote, America will find it infinitely more difficult to maintain its technological leadership if it shuts out the very people who are most able to help us compete. He added that we are driving away the world's best and brightest precisely when we need them the most. I don't know about you, ladies and gentlemen. I'm kind of old school. I always thought that there was a word for America's best and brightest. I thought we called them Americans. When Russia launched Sputnik, I'm old enough to remember that Friday, October the 4th, 1957. It was an evening when I was home with a miserable cold. My parents had wheeled the TV next to my bed, and I was watching an old show called The Life of Riley with William Bendix. You could look it up on the internet. I'm sure it's there in Google. And suddenly they broke in with a commercial, with a bulletin, rather. And back then it wasn't like today where every 15 minutes we have news alerts and bulletins and stuff. Back then when there was a bulletin, boy, oh boy, you paid attention. And what was the bulletin? Russia had launched a satellite. A couple of weeks later they launched Sputnik 2 with a dog by the name of Laika, who didn't live more than a couple of hours after launch. But boy, they were ahead of us. And suddenly science became the number one issue. Science and math, science and math. President Eisenhower made that the priority. And I was already well into my interest in science, so I actually wound up giving little talks to my fifth grade class back in 1957 about astronomy, about science, about airplanes, and so forth, as teachers were being geared up to teach the classes. And I remind you that the United States of America more than 40 years ago achieved a goal that no other country has yet achieved. Landed men successfully on the moon and returned them safely back to the earth, as John F. Kennedy had called for in 1961 in a very stirring speech. Kennedy did not say, get on the phone and call India. He said, let's go to the American schools and get these kids up to speed. See, I have this very quaint notion that for America to do well, Americans must do well. Period. Period. End of sentence. End of statement. End of thought. For America to do well, Americans must do well. Abe Lincoln talked about our country being a country of the people, by the people, for the people. Damn it, he got it right. But not Mr. Gates. Oh, no. He'll go all over the world looking for foreign workers. If you're an American worker, too bad. And you have a president who marches lockstep with Gates. And unfortunately, there are too many damn Republicans who are on the same page. Yeah, Jeff Sessions gets it right. He's the guy that's out there demanding that Americans get first shot. I really wish Senator Sessions would run for president. I'd finally get a night's sleep. Haven't had a good one since 9/11. But in any event, let me finish up on what Greenspan had to say. And I got to tell you, the day after Greenspan testified, I watched this hearing live on the internet, and you could still go to the internet and watch that hearing. It's on the Judiciary Committee website. I was on a radio program, and the young lady whose show I was on said to me, "Mr. Cutler, what did you think of Greenspan as you watched him testify?" I said, "Well, I was struck by the fact that I believe I witnessed a first that day." And she said, "What sort of a first?" I said, "It was the first time they let somebody testify who was suffering from rigor mortis." I could not possibly detest that guy more than I do. The nonsense, the lies, the way he is willing to destroy, in fact, not willing, but seeking to destroy the middle class, is as anti-American as anything I've ever heard. Anyway, to finish, our skill shortage, I trust, will ultimately be resolved through reform in our primary and secondary education systems, but at best that will take many years. An accelerated influx of highly skilled immigrants would bridge that gap and, moreover, carry with it two significant bonuses. If you take blood pressure pills, take it now. First, skilled workers and their families form new households. They will of necessity move into vacant housing units, the current glut of which is depressing prices of American homes. By the way, vacant housing unit, isn't that a poetic way of describing an American home lost to foreclosure? An American family booted out onto the street? Talking about those homes as dispassionately as you could possibly imagine. So anyway, the current glut of which is depressing prices of American homes, and of course house price declines are a major factor in mortgage foreclosures and the plunge in value of the vast quantity of U.S. mortgage-backed securities that has contributed substantially to the disabling of our banking system. Bunk! What is contributing to the banking system going down through the floorboards were the subprime mortgages that were conjured up by Greenspan and company for illegal aliens where they could not do a credit check on them because these folks use multiple false identities. A big part of the reason we have so much identity theft is because of illegal aliens seeking to create fictitious identities so they can work in the United States. And in fact, I have a speech that he gave before the Federal Reserve Bank roughly 3 years before he went before Schumer bragging about those subprime mortgages and saying that these are people who normally would not have qualified for loans, but because of new advances in banking and technology, this is a great way to make a lot of money. Wow. Wow. Point the finger somewhere else, Greenspan. It's amazing. And then this is the killer. This is where we really get to the heart of the issue. The second bonus, that is to say, of bringing in more H-1B visas, would address the increasing concentration of income in this country. I wonder who's getting too much money in this economy, folks. And here's the paragraph. Greatly expanding our quotas for the highly skilled would lower wage premiums of the skilled over the lesser skilled. Skill shortages in America exist because we are shielding our skilled labor force from world competition. And in the process, we have created a privileged elite. Could you imagine that? He's talking about wage premiums, which really means salaries, and refers to American middle-class educated workers as the privileged elite. We have created a privileged elite whose incomes are being supported at non-competitively high levels by immigration quotas on skilled professionals. Eliminating such restrictions would reduce at least some of our income inequality. You know, everyone's jumping on this bandwagon, income equality, right? You have comedians on TV talking about it, Bill Maher, income equality, Bill Gates is a gazillionaire, and the average American can't afford to pay the cable bill. Let me tell you, they do want income equality. Absolutely, they're working mightily, night and day, to get income equality. But who is going to be made more equal? See, this has nothing to do with reducing the gap in wages between the wealthy and the middle class. Everything to do with reducing the gap between the middle class and the poor by lowering middle class wages, by slicing off that wage premium. See, he didn't say reduce the salaries because, so it's this deceptive language of obfuscation. Oh, that wage premium, because they're privileged elite and they shouldn't be. We're shielding them. Let's take down the shields. Let's take down the shields. And so we come back to the border, the ISIS fighters coming in. Our borders and our laws are supposed to shield us, but they don't. And then we get to a New York Post article. Now, this is an amazing article, folks. Here's the headline. The headline says it all. New York Post, September 10th, 2014. Fasten your seatbelt, ladies and gentlemen. We're about to hit some turbulence. Here's the headline. Homeland Security, we cannot stop ISIS from coming into the U.S. You heard it right. That was the statement by the representatives of the Department of Homeland Surrender. We can't stop ISIS from coming into the U.S. So now, how are we going to vet the people that Mr. Obama wants to take care of? Newsweek this week has a very interesting story, and I want you to put these dots together. Maybe we should mail some crayons to the Obama administration and the fools on the Hill that call themselves Congress. Inside the CIA's Syrian rebels vetting machine. And they quoted a guy I know, Charles Faddis, former director of counterterrorism at the Central Intelligence Agency. And what did they talk about? They talked about how they're in Syria trying to figure out how to identify the so-called moderates so they can give them weapons and training so they can help purge Syria of ISIS. And they're talking about how it's very difficult because they're trying to take care of 5,000 people and they tend to lie. They can't deal with 5,000 people. They're doing face-to-face interviews. They're in country with them so they can hop in a Jeep or a Humvee or whatever and go knock on neighbors' doors and interview them and do what they have to do to conduct an honest-to-God background investigation. They can't deal with 5,000. It's a real problem. Let me read to you the beginning of the article. This, again, November 10th, 2014, Newsweek magazine, inside the CIA's Syrian rebels vetting machine. Here's how it begins. Nothing has come in for more mockery during the Obama administration's halting steps into the Syrian civil war than its employment of, quote, moderate to describe the kind of rebels it is willing to back. In one of the more widely cited japes, The New Yorker's resident humorist Andy Borowitz presented a, quote, moderate Syrian application form, unquote, in which applicants were asked to describe themselves as either A, moderate, B, very moderate, C, crazy moderate, or D, other. After Senator John McCain allegedly posed with Syrians who are on our side, supposedly, who turned out to be kidnappers, a report later called into question, John Stewart, not everyone is going to be wearing their "Hello, I'm a terrorist" name badge. If you can't vet 5,000 Syrians in their home country, in their home village, how in blazes does Obama plan to vet 5 million, 10 million, 15 million foreign nationals in America who are undocumented? Now, what does that mean? They either don't have or don't want you to see their official identity documents. What could possibly go wrong? What could possibly go wrong? So no one's asking that question. And if you watch TV, if you watch TV, what do we hear? We hear people that are radio talk show hosts. We hear all kinds of people coming up there to talk about what? Immigration. What do they know about immigration? Bupkis. Bupkis. But they all have the answers. Well, you know, if they were talking about the Ebola virus, they wouldn't have talk show hosts talking about the Ebola virus, right? That wouldn't be happening. If they were going to do a story on the Ebola virus, they'd bring in epidemiologists, virologists, surgeons, pathologists, biochemists. But this is immigration. So what the heck? We'll just bring in, you know, talk show hosts, political commentators, pollsters. This isn't a political problem, folks. This is a national security criminal justice problem. And now we're listening to what are the Republicans going to do. I was on a radio show this morning, my friend Gary Sutton, who has a program out of Pennsylvania. And Gary said to me, he said, Mike, if you were made emperor for a day, I said, well, I'd be pretending I'd be Obama, I guess, when you think about being an emperor, right? But he said, if you had a magic wand and you could fix the problem, what would you do? If you were a Republican, what would you do? And I thought about it, and an idea just occurred to me, and I'm going to share it with you. And I'd like you to call your elected representatives and share my idea with them, too. First and foremost, what the president wants to do undermines national security, runs 180 degrees contrary to the findings and the recommendations of the 9/11 Commission. I suspect that he will get away with this for a while. So what we need to do is have Congress turn around and appropriate money to hire thousands of agents and thousands of adjudications officers, so that there are actual interviews conducted. You know, it's amazing that the president and members of Congress scream bloody murder over Snowden, and I personally think Snowden's a mixed bag. I'm very disturbed by the NSA doing what they're doing and snooping in our private lives. This is America. They're, by charter, not supposed to be doing that. On the other hand, you don't go to Russia and bring a bunch of top-secret documents with you. So I think what he did was traitorous. So we have all these people, you know, Claire McCaskill, the senator, is out there screaming about it, right? How did they vet him? How do they do these background investigations on Snowden? And then she said the same thing about that Navy Yard shooter in Washington, if you remember, because he had a security pass to be on the base. And the president talked about it. Oh, we got to be careful about the way we do security checks. Okay. And they're right. So what security check are we going to follow with people such as the ones we're now dealing with? We have no idea who they are. We have no official identity documents, no face-to-face interview, no field investigations. Yeah, they'll submit their fingerprints, but if they've never been fingerprinted in the United States, the prints will come back, no record. And by the way, they're apparently going to be using private companies. What if there's corruption and these guys know that their fingerprints are on file, and they want to get an ID and a fake name? What would prevent them from submitting a fingerprint card that somebody else has someone else's fingerprints on it? I mean, there's all kinds of loopholes in the system that nobody is discussing, and we need to have a frank conversation about it. So what the Republicans ought to be doing, and what the Democrats, as good Americans, let's be Americans for a change, folks, should be demanding that the administration hire thousands of new agents and new adjudications officers. And meanwhile, they could assign FBI, DEA, ATF agents to an immigration fraud task force, because immigration fraud was identified by the 9/11 Commission as the primary method by which aliens embedded themselves in the United States. I did my very first congressional hearing 4.5 years before 9/11. What was the topic? Visa fraud, immigration benefit fraud. The reason for the hearing? What was the incentive for holding that hearing? The two terror attacks conducted in 1993 in the United States, where the aliens either gamed the visa process or the amnesty program or the political asylum program. How in the world could the administration refuse to hire the agents to make certain that terrorists don't get official ID? You'd be boxing the administration in, and we would finally be taking a step in the right direction to fix what's wrong with immigration, the lack of integrity to the system. I was told by a staffer in Washington today that the Dreamers' approval rate now stands at 97.3%. It takes minutes to approve an application, days or hours or more hours or days or more, maybe weeks, to deny one. Okay? If you pressure these folks and they're being pressured, then they wind up not sending cases back for review because they have to meet quotas and their careers depend on it. Think of the hilarious episode of I Love Lucy at the Bon Bon Factory where she and Ethel have candy hurtling at them at warp speed and they just can't wrap them all and they're warned that if any candy gets by them, they're going to be fired. So they're eating it, they're stuffing it in their mouths, they're stuffing it down their clothing, and everybody laughs. This isn't funny. This is national security with these applications, folks. So my solution is they need to get thousands of agents to go out there, conduct the investigations, make it clear that if you're caught committing fraud, you're going to be arrested, you're going to go to jail, you're going to be prosecuted. And you know what? In a perverse way, Chuck Schumer thinks that's the solution, except not where immigration's concerned. Chuck Schumer, not unlike Bloomberg, screams about trespassing. About a year and a half ago, Bloomberg was yelling about the folks who were trespassing in public housing in the Bronx and not getting arrested and prosecuted. And he held news conference after news conference. And what did Bloomberg say? Boy, oh boy, these people wandering around the housing project, you show me trespassers and I'll show you the way we get back to the bad old days of crime. When someone trespasses, the people in those buildings want the police to stop them and ask them, who are you and why are you here? That's kind of remarkable, because for 4 years I was an immigration inspector, and for 4 years that was pretty much the questions that I asked people showing up to enter the United States. Who are you? Why are you here? How long do you plan to stay? And so forth. And then recently, we had a number of trespassing incidents in New York. If you remember, a couple of months ago, some characters, I believe they were German, took down the American flags on top of the Brooklyn Bridge, and there are two of them on the two towers, replaced them with big white flags. And then we had someone hang a Palestinian flag off the Manhattan Bridge, and then we had a couple of adventurous characters do a base jump off the roof of the new Trade Center Tower. So Schumer comes out a couple of weeks ago, and he's ranting and raving and screaming, and what does he talk about? These people that are trespassing pose a threat to public safety. When people trespass, you never know what they're up to. This is a dangerous era, and we don't know why somebody would trespass on one of our landmarks, but that poses a threat to our safety. And the reason they're doing it is because the punishment isn't severe enough. And then he made the point that right now trespassing in New York City carries with it a maximum of a year in jail. And he said usually the worst these folks will get is 3 months in jail, if that much, because most of them just get a slap on the wrist, they pay a fine, and they go on their merry way. So what did Chuck Schumer propose? Chuck said, you know what? This should be a 5-year felony. You trespass and you go to jail and you sit there for a couple of years cooling your jets and then people will stop trespassing. You need to deter that dangerous activity. What a revelation. Aliens who run our borders, ladies and gentlemen, I submit to you, are trespassing. They are trespassing. And yet, what does Schumer want to do? What did Bloomberg do? Bloomberg gave them the key to the city, and Schumer wants to give them the key to America's front door by providing them with a pathway to United States citizenship. So I see where there are some Americans now, people who have citizenship through naturalization, people who have green cards, talking about lawsuits against the federal government, saying, hey, wait a minute, I jumped through all these hoops, I had to wait all these years, it slowed down the progress of my careers and my dreams, I'm suing for damage, and they should, because they are being shafted. You know, it's not anti-immigrant to be pro-enforcement. Our immigration laws take a balanced approach. They don't only tell us who to keep out and who to kick out, but who to let in. And every year, our country admits more than 1 million lawful immigrants, more than the rest of the world combined. Every year, our country naturalizes hundreds of thousands of new citizens under our laws that I support. I think they need to be enforced so that there's integrity to the process, but it's through those laws that aliens enter the United States. Legally, that's what legally means in accordance with law, the laws that we support. It's an outrage to say that you're being anti-immigrant when you support the laws that allow aliens to immigrate. Stop and think about it. This is the false accusation made by the other side because they know they're liars and swindlers and con artists. They know that the facts don't support their nonsense. They know that morality and common sense and the legal system doesn't support what they want. So they become swindlers and con artists. This is the equivalent of deceptive language in a contract. You know, look out for the small print. Look out for the small print, because this is all about deceiving people through the artful use of language. That's what this is about. Nothing more, nothing less. It's about a deception game. These are con artists, absolute freaking con artists. So understand the point. Now, I have a question for you. You see all this emphasis, and we're going to run for about another 10 minutes, and then we'll pack it in, but we do have the extra time, and I want to make use of it today. By the way, here's an interesting quote from George Orwell. There's a few of them here that I really love. In a time of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. Welcome to the Mike Cutler revolution is all I can say. It's time you folks had the truth. I keep thinking of Jack Nicholson at the court-martial. You know, you people can't handle the truth. Yes, you can. It's that our supposed leaders won't let you have the truth. Our supposed journalists won't allow you to know the truth. So understand the problem. All this talk about the border, the Mexican border. Listen, aliens are coming into the country through ports of entry, seaports, land border port along the northern border, and international airports. We have 50 border states. I know I put a plug out for it a couple of weeks ago. I'm going to do it again. Go to the internet and look up the border states of America. Tea Party Patriots film. I'm proud to be in it, but that's not why I want you to see it, although I do feel very proud about being a part of that wonderful film. Senator Jeff Sessions is in it. Congressman Louie Gohmert is in it. Congressman Steve King is in it. They interview border sheriffs and ranchers, and they traveled all the way along the U.S.-Mexican border from Texas all the way to Arizona, and wait till you see the film. Oh, my God. There is no border. This nonsense, the border is secure. Big, fat, juicy, steaming, stinky, smelly lie. Okay? You got to see it. It's a 58-minute film. They hired Nick Searcy to be the narrator. They put a lot of money and a lot of love into this film. A lot of effort. They went away. They separated themselves from their families, took some real risks doing this, and it's an amazing film. They are looking for a little contribution, so if you watch it and you're so inclined, mail them a couple of bucks. They spent six figures in this thing, and they want to do a sequel, and if they're successful in recouping some of that money, hopefully I will work with them on a follow-up film. But one way or the other, I want you to see the film, and I want you to get as many other people to see that film. You'll see what really passes for border security. So this notion that once the border is secure, that's all we need to do is a big, fat, smelly lie. And we're hearing it from everybody on the mainstream media. All it is about the border. And what happens once people get past the border? What about the people who lie on the applications and they manage to succeed in gaming the system? I want you to stop and think about it. By the way, here's a question for you to think about, and I'll give you the answer before we go off the air. How many times does it take an illegal alien to run the border before he or she is successful in entering the United States? Well, I'm going to repeat it. How many times does an illegal alien have to run the border before they are successful in entering the United States? And let me show you an example. And I mentioned this to members of Congress when I was at the Horowitz Restoration Weekend in Florida last week. They were talking about the Tsarnaev brothers, you know, the two dirtbags who carried out that terrorist attack up in Boston during the marathon, killed a campus police officer, a young man with his whole life ahead of him. And you know, when so many people spoke on his behalf, you know, you sit here crying. This guy was robbed of his life, his family, robbed of his company. His friends, his neighbors, the people he worked with. No reason for it. The Tsarnaev brothers didn't run the border. And, of course, Geraldo made that point. Oh, nothing is coming across the Mexican border. No, Geraldo, just tons and tons and tons of drugs and weapons and illegal aliens and people involved in crime. Give me a break. When I was assigned to DEA intelligence, for the record, and I wish I was on the program to confront them, but that's not likely going to happen. That's why I have this radio program. I'm going to be doing two more radio shows tomorrow, another radio show on Sunday, another two radio programs on Monday. look, I'm doing whatever I can to get the information out there. And if you find my information interesting or useful or helpful, please forward it. I'm trying to create this bucket brigade of truth. But, you know, oh, there's nothing going on the Mexican border. Okay, Geraldo, go back to sleep. Go trim your mustache. I mean, it's an absurdity to say these things. It's an absurdity. It angers me. People, unfortunately, tend to pay special attention to people they see on TV. You know, how many times have you seen crap and shrink wrap being sold in the supermarket or someplace, and in the corner it says, as seen on TV, like it's magical. As seen on TV. You know, you can sell the chia pet on TV. There's nothing wrong with chia pets, but understand my point. It's not special. It's just that someone paid a lot of money to get a couple of minutes on the air. But here's my point. The 93 terror attacks had nothing to do with the Mexican border. 9/11 had nothing to do with the Mexican border. The Tsarnaev brothers had nothing to do with the Mexican border. That's all we're hearing about, though. Just fix the Mexican border. Plug that one hole in the colander and all the other problems go away, okay? We need to secure the Mexican border. As I told Congressman Brandenstein when I was with him, he's a former naval aviator, I said, look, a wing, the Mexican border, security on the Mexican border is like a wing on an airplane. Without the wing, an airplane won't fly, but the wing by itself goes nowhere. That border needs to be made secure, period. No ifs, ands, or buts. But we've got to address the other vulnerabilities. It's about American lives and national security. The Tsarnaev brothers entered the United States, I believe, as students. Didn't matter. They had visas of one sort or another. They claim political asylum, which means I have a credible fear that if I go back to my home country, I'm screwed. Okay, fair enough. We gave them political asylum. And then what do? They went back to their home country. Doesn't that prove that they lied? There was no regime change. Putin is still there. Okay? So Putin is there. They claim they can't go back. They get lawful status. They go back. As an agent, let me tell you, I'd be heading for the grand jury at that point to try to get an indictment for conspiracy to commit immigration fraud and, in fact, for committing fraud. And remember what I read to you about the 9/11 Commission staff report. Immigration fraud was an issue, and the way that they filed political asylum applications was an issue for the terrorists. But they have other members of the family in the United States. And their sister was still floating around here for 14 months after the attack. Well, wait a minute. She came in with them. They all apparently committed fraud. Why wasn't she rolled up? Why didn't immigration come along and say, you know, this family's shady. Two of the boys were involved with terrorism. They killed people. They maimed people. These people lied on the application. We need to get rid of them. They're a problem for us. They didn't. They apparently didn't haul her in because she was still floating around out there. And how do we know about the sister? Because she got arrested by police in Boston, I believe, for threatening to blow up her ex-boyfriend. Seems to be a family pattern of explosive personality, if you know what I mean. And when I spoke with members of Congress, when I spoke to Sessions, Senator Sessions, when I spoke to Congressman Gohmert, I said, you know, this isn't just low-hanging fruit. I coined a new expression. I said this was fruit in the basket. Not much heavy lifting to do this investigation. She traveled. She claimed political asylum. Thank you and good night. There is no way that this was a justifiable claim of asylum. There is nothing in any of the proposals by either the Democrats or the Republicans that would address fraud. So, to me, here's the golden opportunity. Obama went out there and said, we're going to process 5 million applications. The 9/11 Commission report said immigration fraud was a key vulnerability that was exploited by Al-Qaeda. We know that ISIS wants to come here. Last weekend, yet another American lost his head to those dirtbags. The threat is real. This isn't a hallucination. This isn't about black helicopters. What Congress should be doing is saying, okay, you're apparently going to act without us, so we're going to go on record demanding that we create a fraud task force And by the way, Sheila Jackson Lee called me to testify at a hearing, the first or two hearings. The first was about how two of the dead terrorists, Mohammed Atta and Marwan al-Sheikh, could have been granted authorization to attend flight school. I mean, it was unbelievable. The second hearing was really interesting. They were doing a hearing about alien smuggling. I was asked if I wanted to participate, and I pushed the point that if you're going to do a hearing about alien smuggling, you need to look at visa fraud. Because at the end of the day, smuggling is about getting aliens into the United States who should not have access to our country. So if you can work with them to come up with a bogus visa, you're facilitating their entry into our country, and they're not supposed to be here. It's called visa fraud. Visa fraud is a component of 9/11 investigation, the 9/11 Commission report. So how hard a deal is it? In fact, by the way, when I wrote a memo for Jackson Lee to convince her that I was right, I said that by requiring the visa process have integrity, that visa process pushes America's borders out to the embassies and consulates where they're issued. To this day, when they hold hearings in Washington about visas, they almost always use that phrase, pushing out America's borders. So I'd love to see the Republicans and hopefully enough Democrats go to Obama and say, okay, you're acting on your own. You're endangering national security and public safety. We need to have more agents to make certain that aliens aren't involved with terrorism, aren't displacing American workers, aren't doing harm to this country or our people. It's only reasonable that they want to provide unknown millions of illegal aliens who snuck into the country and therefore their identities and other data, including entry data and country of citizenship, can't be verified. We need the resources to at least create a modicum of integrity in that process. If you agree with me, I want you to call your congressman on Monday morning and start hammering the issue. And you could tell him I said so. Tell him to go look up the hearings that I've done. This is a common sense approach, folks. Absolutely a common sense approach. We need to have integrity to the immigration system because first and foremost, that is what's broken. And the remedy isn't difficult. It's about getting the agents on the ground and conducting the investigations and instilling integrity into that vital process. That's what it's about. I said, well, let me tell you one other thing here. This is interesting, and I'm going to end it on this. I asked you a little while ago, how many times does an alien have to run the border to be successful? And the answer is one more than the number of times that they get apprehended by the Border Patrol. Now, if that sounds funny to you, let me tell you why I make the point. Any alien who is sufficiently determined to succeed in entering the United States will inevitably succeed. And unless we are willing to put people out there inside the United States and enforcing our immigration laws from within the interior, we have no way of controlling who's present in our country. Go back to what the 9/11 Commission staff report said about border security being an essential component of national security and the war on terror. We need to back up the inspectors at the ports of entry, the CBP, Customs and Border Protection inspectors, and we need to back up the Border Patrol by meaningful interior enforcement. There are about 7,000 ICE agents for the whole country, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And it's remarkable because now they're morphing into a separate division, HSI, Homeland Security Investigations. They are determined, this administration is, to take the word immigration out of anything they can. They wish the word immigration didn't exist anywhere. Think about it. So what's really necessary is for our government to have many more agents to enforce the law. 7,000 ICE agents, more than half of whom are doing customs work. We're lucky if there were 3,000 immigration agents for the entire United States of America. Put it in perspective, New York City has about 35,000 to 40,000 police officers. Just for the little city of New York, it's a little tiny piece of land. Can you imagine? Could you imagine if New York City had 3,000 cops? If we had 3,000 police officers, you'd need a shotgun to go out to buy a newspaper or a container of milk. This is crazy. We have a lack of resources for interior enforcement. But I testified before the Immigration Reform Caucus a few weeks after 9/11, and I did so without authority. And things got really messy after that, but I felt so strongly watching those ashes land on my home, seeing all my neighbors who had passed away, you know, speaking to my neighbors. I mean, this is a serious problem. And one of the things that I had said was that we needed to have an enforcement tripod. And a major component of that enforcement tripod was a meaningful interior enforcement mission. Not just going into the prisons, which I had recommended to Senator D'Amato when we got the reentry law changed to make reentry for criminals a 20-year crime. Not just to go after the employers of illegal aliens. Not just to arrest the illegal aliens, but to go after fraud and the applications program. We need a meaningful interior enforcement program. And if Mr. Obama wants to push forward with this disastrous program that would undermine national security, public safety, and the well-being of American workers, then let's at least push back and look for a remedy, because apparently he's hell-bent on doing this. And I'd love to see him argue against making certain that there's integrity to the process, even as we're being warned that ISIS is on the move. Jackson Lee warned us that ISIS is probably going to get in, and she reminded everybody in one of those reports that it only took 19 terrorists to kill 3,000 people. I can't imagine any reasonable argument from any member of Congress to push back against the creation of a meaningful fraud task force. Way back when, Sheila Jackson Lee actually worked with Congressman Jim Sensenbrenner, who at the time was chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, to create a fraud task force. Unfortunately, it didn't happen the way we had hoped it would. Maybe the time has come. Let's look for the long-range solution of restoring integrity to this vital component of national security. To my thinking, this is an opportunity to make something happen that could have a benefit for everybody, especially the safety of American Americans. My perspective. You can reach me through my website, michaelcutler.net. I'd love to know what you think, but I believe this is a good first step to restoring some sanity to a system that is fundamentally a component of national security. Got to tell you, folks, it's always good meeting with you at the end of the week this way. I thank you so much for tuning in and listening to the program. It will be available on podcast. If you like the program, if you think the information I provided this evening is worthwhile, tell your friends about it. Tell them to listen. You know, as I said, I'm trying to create a bucket brigade of truth. I want to provide you with the information that the mainstream media refuses to provide. And this seems to be a pretty effective way of doing it if we can get enough folks to listen and pay attention. And that's really what it's about. Please go to michaelcutler.net. Please go to CAPSWeb, C-A-P-S, CAPSWeb.org. They do a great job in California. It doesn't hurt to make contributions to groups you like. I'm not going to sit here making solicitations. But, you know, you get the idea. People need to do what they can do to help organizations that provide vital services. And certainly today, truth is a vital service. You know, when you listen to the politicians and you realize where they're coming from, you realize how big a problem it is. By the way, there was one other quote from Orwell. I have to tell you this one. I don't want to get off the air and think, gee whiz, I blew the opportunity, because this one's a beaut. Orwell said this in 1946. Political language, and with variations, this is true of all political parties, from conservatives to anarchists, is designed to make lies sound truthful and murder respectable, and give an appearance of solidity to pure wind. Mr. Obama wasn't even alive back then. Kind of amazing, isn't it? Anyway, again, go to michaelcutler.net, capsweb.org, Front Page Magazine, Progressives for Immigration Reform, and I hope you'll enjoy them. And if you like what you're seeing, again, please pass the information along, but please, folks, start making those phone calls. Start making those phone calls to Washington, to your member of Congress, to both of your senators, to all the other folks you could think of on Capitol Hill. And don't just make one call. be the biggest pain in the rear end they've ever experienced. They're doing it to us. Turnabout is fair play. We can certainly get under their skin, and they need to know that we are paying attention. A good boss is a boss who makes certain that his employees or her employees are doing what's expected. When you go to the restaurant, I'm sure you're very specific about the way we order food. We want to make sure that the food that we want is what they serve us and that it's prepared the way we want it prepared. And if we don't like it, we send it back. And if that doesn't work, we leave. We need to be no less specific with our supposed elected representatives. Do what needs to be done, folks. I remind you, as always, democracy is not a spectator sport. I look forward to seeing you again, same place, same time, right here on the Michael Cutler Hour next week. Meanwhile, I wish all of you a good weekend, happy Thanksgiving, and we'll see you next Friday. So long for now.